IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello and welcome back to IRS on the Road. We are always happy to be with you, and we are at a very interesting place this week.
Do you listeners think Las Vegas is... Linda usually says interesting when she doesn't want to say something negative.
No, the architecture here is unbelievable.
Oh, the architecture. Oh, okay.
Really unbelievable.
What else do you like?
The weather.
The weather. There you go.
Yeah. We can name a few things we don't like, but we're here to enjoy a tennis tournament, which is really nice.
And that's all we're going to say about that, because I won a national one a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't win this one. I got third, and getting third is not too great. Although,
fine.
You know, we're going to do third, 3RD, as a three-letter lesson one of these days. So Maybe that's why that happened.
Oh, maybe so. But anyway, the nice thing about tennis at this stage in our life is that all the people are so nice. Well, except for this one guy today.
Which ties right in.
Yes, it does. We'll tell that story later.
So some of you are new to the show, and you don't yet know fully what a three-letter lesson is. So, Linda, what's a three-letter lesson?
It's a word with three letters that teaches a lesson. There you go.
We've been fans since we were young, which is a very long time ago. We've been fans of something that Benjamin Franklin did. A lot of people have done it, but Benjamin became famous for it. He liked to pick certain words that described the type of character he wanted to have. And then he would work on them one at a time. And he had a list of them on his wall so he could look at them. And they were very practical words like punctual and courteous and so on. And he wanted to work those words into his persona, into his personality, into his character. And we've always been kind of interested in that. And we had a long list of words when we were first married. We called them the BF words in honor of Benjamin Franklin. And they were words that we thought were not only things we wanted to become, but sort of words that fascinated us themselves. Serendipity, elan, pizzazz, stewardship. We had about 25 of them. At one point, we even put them on a mobile. We put them on little slips of paper and hung them from the ceiling in a mobile so the wind would blow them around. And our idea was to lay in our waterbed and look up at them. And they would sort of absorb into our natures by osmosis.
It would be just like those words if we just looked at them long enough. But it was a fun time. And it is interesting that if you have something in your mind like that, it does make a difference in how you react to people, how you react to situations. And I liked it.
You try to get it into your subconscious so that you behave that way without consciously making a choice to. And the latest iteration of that is, in our minds, is these three-letter lessons, as we call them, because we thought if we can reduce these things that we want to be or that we want to remember or that we want to incorporate into our natures down to three letters, that's like a little word peg. It's just something you can peg in your mind and keep it there, and it'll hopefully influence your behavior. So those of you who are regular listeners know that we're up to, I think this is number 40, might be even number 41. We'll check that before we put in the show notes.
We've been doing this for
a long time.
So, I mean, not just this, but this radio show for a long time. So 40 isn't really that much.
That's true. We just do it occasionally, but this is number 40 or 41. And we're actually going to finish one we started last week and then introduce a new one, which is particularly relevant to where we are right now in Las Vegas and at a competitive tennis tournament. But let's finish up on ALM. Last week, we introduced the three-letter lesson ALM, A-L-M. Now, usually, we hear that as a four-letter word. It's usually ALMS for the poor, and it means a gift. It means mercy. It means charity. It means giving to people who are in need or who are poor. And it's a very biblical word that Jesus himself used the word many times, giving alms to the poor.
Although, interestingly, we could not find that word in the Old Testament at all.
Now, that's well, because Christ really is that is in that's telling. Yeah, that's telling that mercy. I mean, if the Old Testament is the law of justice, then the New Testament has often been thought of as the law of mercy, and alms, such a key word. But we like the idea of it singular, alm. And there is one place that we found in the scriptures. Actually, there's two, but one's a little more prominent, where the word is alm deeds, A-L-M-D-E-E-D, an alm deed. And we just love that because that implies it's not just giving money or giving goods or giving physical things. An alm can be a deed. It can be a smile. It can be a compliment. It can be helping someone. It can be doing a little service. It can be doing your ministering for the month. That's an alm deed. Kind of a lovely thought.
I like that. And we should have found somebody to do an alm deed to here in Las Vegas. There've got to be a lot of people that could use an alm deed here.
There's a lot of people that can use alms because they've just lost their
right
money.
But it has been kind of fun for us to think about this week because we always say service or, you know, comparable words, but we don't think of it very often as an alm.
And actually, I did do kind of an alm deed at my tennis.
Yes, you
today.
Did. Yes, you did.
Because we want to juxtaposition this three-letter lesson, alm, which is really pretty straightforward. Think in terms of serving. Think in terms of what you can do for someone. Try to do an alm deed every day or many times a day because they're easy. They're simple. Sometimes, like I mentioned, it's as simple as smiling or saying hello or making someone feel a little bit better in some way. And if we're aware, what's our alm deed today? What can we do that's an alm? Then you can do it. But we want to juxtaposition that a little with another three-letter lesson, which is the word win, W-I-N. I was looking out the window here, and there's a big hotel in Las Vegas called The Win, although it has two N's on it. But I was thinking about win because the tennis tournaments I'm playing in are like any sport, like any competition. They are win-lose. One person wins and one loses, and they engender competition. And I love competition. I think competition motivates us. It's a wonderful thing, but my goodness, it has its limits. And I guess if we had one wish, we would say, if only competition in the world could be limited to sports, if we could take all of our competitive drive and focus it on sports, then it wouldn't carry over into our personal relationships and our comparing with other people and who's the best. And I can only win if I do better than you. And I'm only good if I put you down, and all those win-lose mentalities that are so troubling.
Oh, Richard, we're looking at a lot of competition out our window right now here.
Yeah, we
There's
are.
Competition for contracts to build things better than somebody else and so on. It's a huge thing. I mean, competition is everywhere, and it is necessary. And one reason that this is such an incredible place is because of the competition.
Well, this may be the all-time capital of win-lose mentality, right? Because every casino on every corner, every slot machine, every roulette wheel, every 21 table, you're going to either win or you're going to lose. And over time, the odds are that the house will win more than you do.
Yeah, but you need to finish your story about tennis today, because even though you lost a tiebreaker, I think it was a win because
of, well, because of alm?
No.
Well, in a way.
No, you didn't do that to be kind.
Well, so well, I kind of did. We were thinking about the subject as we were playing, and just let me simplify it to say that we had a very, I had a very, very close match, and I really liked the guy I was playing, but he did make a really bad call. And I had a choice to make, I guess. Maybe it's a good thing we were thinking about this, right? Because
right.
I could have made a big deal of it and tried to prove to him that he was wrong on that call and that I was right. And it would have resolved somehow. I mean, maybe I would have prevailed and got that point, or maybe he would have. But it would have been a win-lose. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is even in a competition, and let's face it, sports, that's where we want to channel our competitive spirit. And it is win-lose. Somebody's going to win that match and someone's going to lose. If you end up tied like we did today, you play a tiebreaker to find out who wins and who loses. There's only one winner, there's only one loser, and so on. But we thought how interesting it is that within that competition, there are little chances to have a win-win. And I think that's what happened. I mean, I thought the call was wrong. I mentioned that, are you sure? We gave it the proper thing might have been to play the point over, but he was sure. He was wrong, but he was sure. And so I thought, hey, you know, no big deal. And I just let it pass. And we had a good friendly talk, and we left as friends, and that didn't get in the way. So that was a win-win within a win-lose. And so I guess that's just an illustration of how, if you're going to try to have this win-win mentality, you pretty much got to do it all the time.
Yeah, it's good to be aware of that. There's so many stories that I think I've been writing a story about something that happened to me, to my mother, actually, several years ago, but she was older, and I was sparing you a whole lot of details. She was backing out her driveway. She was 83 on her way to do a good deed. To do alms. And this little family came along, and their three-year-old ran out behind her car and bumped his head on her bumper. She was still moving. And of course, it created some blood. And of course, she was horrified and loaded the family in the car, took them to the hospital, which was two blocks away. They did have to do two or three little stitches, and they assured him that everything was fine with the child and everything was fine until she learned that they were suing her. I think there was something about brain damage or something. I absolutely
know. They admitted later that they knew everything was okay. Yeah. They just needed money.
Well, yeah, she didn't sleep for 2 years. We assured her that the insurance would pay and so on. But, you know, when somebody's injured on your property, they can sue you and they can get money.
This is actually a good story, Linda, because this shows how win-win can be a long process to get to it, right?
So one summer I walked back into the store that they own in town. This is
years later.
Maybe two or three years later. And we didn't know them very well. However, they were related. That's another story, kind of distantly. But I realized as I paid for the purchase that I was looking into the eyes of this woman, who the mother of that little child.
Put your mother through misery.
So much stuff. Oh, my gosh. And it kind of took my breath away for a minute. And then I just looked at her deeper and I just thought, oh, she had no idea what she did to my mother. She had no idea. And to our whole family, we were so upset for so long. And I just decided to forgive her right then.
You did that instantly. Wow. That came to you and
what a load that lifted off.
How did you feel? Yeah.
Because I had been fussing about that ever since. And how could anyone do that? But just to let it go, she didn't have any idea. And it was really an amazing feeling to walk out. I felt so light, and just, it was a win, even though there was a huge loss on the way through. But I remember the quote somebody told me, not forgetting someone is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die.
Yeah, you're the one that's suffering.
That is exactly what these people should die for doing this. But anyway, I do think that you can get a great win out of a loss.
So you're basically saying, Linda, maybe I'm oversimplifying, but every time you forgive someone, you've created a win-win.
Right.
Because they win because you're no longer putting that burden or that onus or that sin on them, and you win because you've released.
Yeah, exactly. Right? That release is just so important. Anyway,
let's take a little break and we'll come right back and finish up on this interesting juxtaposition of two three-letter lessons. The positive one of service being ALM, A-L-M, and the negative one, if you put a lose on it, the win-lose, the idea of win when there's a loser. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Iyer's on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back. Taking a deep breath after that story.
Yeah, are you still wondering?
No, I'm done with that. I mean, it really is. It's so amazing what it can do to you when you hold a grudge and then you finally let go of it. It just makes you a different person.
Well, anyway. Let's dig into the idea of win-win or win-lose. As it applies to families, you know, we're recording this on Friday. Yesterday was Halloween, and Las Vegas is an interesting place to spend Halloween, although there aren't quite as many ghouls and goblins as you might think here. But I was thinking how interesting it is that we had a couple of our kids email us the pictures of their personal family jack-o'-lantern carving contest. And it just brought back so many memories of all those years when we would go to the supermarket and get out of those big bins 11 pumpkins, one for you, one for me, and one for each of the 9 kids. And they'd pick their own. And some of them wanted these big ones that you could hardly carry. We barely had room in the car, and we'd bring them home. And we'd and talk about competition. I mean, every one of them, the kids got it from you, Linda, because you're deeply competitive. You don't like to say so, but you are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not playing tennis.
So we're trying to channel this competition, but they all wanted to carve the best pumpkin. And it was not just some little deal. We had all the tools. We had carving tools. I brought up my woodworking tools.
Oh my gosh, getting all of that junk out of those pumpkins.
Oh my gosh. But what I remember, I just distinctly remember one of the first times we did that, and they were all like, "I look at mine, it's so cool, it's the best one," and so on. And so instead of just trying to ignore that and say, well, they're all good, we decided to embrace the idea of prizes. And so we had prizes. We had a prize for the scariest one. We had a prize for the silliest one. We had a prize for the one with the biggest nose. We had a prize for...
We had a prize for everyone.
And so every single pumpkin got a prize, but it was according to what they really were. And it was pretty obvious, you know. I mean, the messiest one, the sloppiest one. No, they were all sort of positive. And so everyone won. Now, some of you may say, well, that's silly. That's like little kids playing baseball and they all get a trophy and it just says participant on it. But actually, I think there's a real lesson here because, well, let me put it this way. You who are parents, when someone says to you, well, who's your favorite child? Well, it becomes a ridiculous question because as a parent, we know we love all of our children equally. And we're so fortunate in our theology to believe that our heavenly parents love each of us, their earthly children, their spirit children equally. But they don't love them in the same way because all of us are different. And the beauty of, I think, the gospel in its fullest sense is that no two people are alike, and yet God loves all of us equally. And as a parent, if we say, well, you know, my favorite child in this particular way is this one, and my favorite child in this particular way. In other words, they don't all have to be the same to be loved equally. We love them all because not of their sameness, but because of their uniqueness. Right. Each one is unique. And so that silly little jack-o'-lantern thing to me, and I think to both of us, kind of became a reminder that, of course, we love them all equally, but boy, are they different from each other.
They're so different. I kind of hope that each one of our children think that I think they are my favorite.
I think a lot of them do. And they are. They're all right.
In their own way. It's just absolutely, they have their own gifts and their own things. And they are my favorite for this and favorite for that and so on. But I think if we think that way, it's just a win-win.
It's a win-win. And in a way, it's also an alm. It's an alm deed. When you look at someone, what's the C.S. Lewis quote that we like so much, where Lewis says, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but one of the things that a true Christian remembers is there are no ordinary people. There are only potential gods and goddesses. And if you could see this person that you're thinking of as average or ordinary, or even beneath you in some way, if you could see that person in their true sense, the way God sees them, Lewis says, your inclination would be to kneel down and worship that person.
Yeah. And we don't want to know, even all the people that we passed by in the last 6 days here, it's amazing. Some of them look totally down and out. Some of them look totally clueless. Some of them look delighted, happy, and so on. But I think every person you meet has the spark in it. In fact, of just writing about the word namaste, when you greet people, it's so wonderful to say, at least in your mind, namaste, because it means, I see the divine spark in you. There is something in you that is beautiful. I see it. And I think that is so good to acknowledge, not just our children, but just as people, as we greet them, whether it's a doorman or whether it's, you know, somebody that you don't know or do know, you know, the feeling they get is, I see something wonderful about you. I just think that is so important, especially with children.
Yeah, absolutely, especially with children. And maybe we should make that a three-letter lesson sometime in the future, Linda, but just the abbreviation, NAM, for namaste, because what an elegant greeting. I mean, we say, hi, how you doing? Hello, hey, whatever, and those are fine. But this, the Indian greeting, namaste, think of the meaning that I see the divine spark in you. If you could teach yourself, if we could teach ourselves to see people in that way, the opposite of judgment, right? Now, I see you, you're probably a gambler. You probably just lost all your money. You're looking down and out. You're probably drinking. There's all those judgmental thoughts. Instead of, I see the divine spark in you. Somewhere in you, I look in your eyes, there's something there. Now we're not judging. We're it's a win-win. It's an alm deed. You're giving that person the benefit of the doubt. You're suggesting, you're remembering that they're a child of God, equal in every way to you and surpassing you in so many ways.
And I think everyone's like that. Gosh, it's so hard not to judge people. The guy that I was sitting by and his wife was the one that, not his wife, but he's the one that beat you yesterday.
Yeah.
And he was so quiet. He seemed kind of glum, kind of quiet. He just never said anything. And then today I find out that, first of all, he's a psychiatrist. and maybe he is glum from all the things that he has experienced in his life. But he was happy. I mean, he was really able to connect.
You look past his grim exterior.
Yeah, and he turns out he's just really a great guy. I think most people, we need to be so careful not to judge, because they all have that divine spark in them.
You know, another thing that ties into, honey, is, and I should have mentioned this at the first part of the show, one of the things Linda's been doing while we're here, while I'm off trying to play these tennis matches, and in the times when we're not at the court, she's working, writing on a wonderful book that we're not at liberty to mention much the nature of it, but Linda's participating in it, and it's essentially about matriarchy. It's essentially about the power of women in our church and the power that, I mean, we hear the term patriarchy as a derogatory term, and it should be in a lot of ways, but the idea of matriarchy and how both of those are so interesting. And what I was thinking as I was proofreading some of what you'd been writing, honey, is, you know, the minute you put a versus in there, the minute you make it win-lose, the minute it's matriarchy versus patriarchy, or man versus women, or women's right versus men's right, or do women have the same privileges as men? And the minute you have the versus in there, not that it's not something that should be discussed, because we're all looking for equality and so on, but when you pit one against the other, when it is a versus, then it loses the magic. And when you put an ampersand, I love the ampersand, the little symbol that means and. When you put that, a matriarchy and a patriarchy, a man and a woman, a mother and a father, a grandfather and a grandmother.
Then it's a win-win.
Then it's a win-win. That's not to say that single parents and single individuals and single grandparents aren't tremendous. In fact, sometimes they are the real heroes in life. But where there are two, why not put the ampersand? Why not think of it as a win-win? Think of it as a way, and again, the alm can come in. How do we serve each other? How do I serve my other half? How do we become one instead of pulling against each other? Not to say that we don't need to argue once in a while, oh, because it's very fun.
We were born to argue.
You were, speaking of win-lose, you're way ahead of me in that one. But let's pretend that it's all been a win-win.
I agree. I am usually right, but oh well. Just kidding. But it really is interesting to think about that win word with relationships, with hard situations, with really deeply disturbing situations. It works no matter where you are in your life. If you're thinking of something as a win-win rather than a win-lose, it really becomes an all.
So maybe some of you, we've talked to some listeners who are actually keeping a list of their own three-letter lessons, their own three-letter words that they want to kind of remember. They want to be reminded of a concept or apply it more in their lives. So we'd recommend those two to you today. It's the first time we've really ever focused on two at once, but ALM, A-L-M, what a beautiful service orientation, and it's the Savior's word, and it can be an alm deed, or it can be mercy. It can be giving alms, giving charity, giving merciful gifts. Beautiful way to orient our lives toward exactly what Christ told us to.
And when you're doing that, it's always a win.
It's always, always a win. And so the win, we'd recommend the win, but the win is kind of a loaded three-letter lesson, because if it's followed by a lose, if it's win-lose, it's a negative lesson. But if it's win-win, of course, our mentor, our beloved mentor, who we miss every day, Stephen Covey, made that part of his, it's one of his seven habits. I think it was the key. I would list it as the number one of his seven habits of highly effective people. Win-win. Find a way that there's not a loser when you win. And that's our hope for you and for ourselves.
So we'll leave you with that. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Ayers on the Road. Bye-bye.